Blog Talk Radio.
Let's have a new first party. A Republican Party raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels. A banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972. Because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking. But they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
we've
spoken before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, well, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Yeah, well, look, hey, Stacy, and the two of y'all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 12, 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine, and I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that, that's for another day, with him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure,
speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacy has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of the other issues we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society. And we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland public schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality, it improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity, you know, over the next few years versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And, you know, what Whitney asked you and what you just said, Ted, it kind of went – you know, this is a good example, be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas, and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and I know it's fine. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website, tedcruz.org, and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org, straight to your house. Moving to the question, look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. And as you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in. And I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow.
Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972. Because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking. But they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
sure,
we've
absolutely.
Spoken before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen. Well, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Yeah, well, look, hey, Stacy, and the two of y'all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people, that decision, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure,
speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice.
because I think a lot of the other issues we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I'm very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland public schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years, versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is, anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and do, knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Just today, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and Renetic Bonds. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was
mm-hmm.
what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question, look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. And as you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in. And I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm you know, I've had some good...
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972, because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want. what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
sure,
we've
absolutely.
Spoken before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, and thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, well, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Well, look, hey, Stace, and the two of y'all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people, that decision, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure,
speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm,
because I think a lot of the other issues
we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland public schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working, and the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had, and the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and do, knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and Fanatic Bonds. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was
mm-hmm.
what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question. Look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. As you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now, you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in, and I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm, I've had some good.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972. Because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want. what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
we've spoken
before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacey on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacey in Texas.
Yeah, well, look, hey, Stace, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacey and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign, literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down. our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people that decision, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean,
yep.
You're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure.
Speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of the other issues
we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to. And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland Public Schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality, it improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years, versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right,
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stace.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas, and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and frenetic signs. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question, look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. As you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now, you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in, and I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacey?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm, you know, I've had some good.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972. Because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking. But they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlet, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
we've spoken
before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Yeah, well, look, hey, Stacy, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas, and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people – that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 – look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you.
I think
Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure,
speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm,
because I think a lot of the other issues
we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland Public Schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years, versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas, and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question, look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. And as you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in. And I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacey?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm you know, I've had some good.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972, because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want. what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
we've
spoken before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Well, look, hey, Stace, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign, literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people, that decision, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you know, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st, as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from 6 or 7 to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure,
speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm,
because I think a lot of the other issues
we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I'm very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland public schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years, versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Just today, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas, and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. And as you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in. And I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972, because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live From Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
we've spoken
before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacey on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacey in Texas.
Well, look, hey, Stace, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question, but the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacey and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean,
yep.
You're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from 6 or 7 to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure.
Speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of the other issues we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland Public Schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working, and the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million
yep,
contract
yep.
to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And, you know, what Whitney asked you and what you just said, Ted, it kind of went – you know, this is a good example, be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and do, knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stace.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and I know it's fine. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was
mm-hmm.
what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question, look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. And as you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in. And I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacey?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm I've had some good...
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972, because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism. with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
we've
spoken before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Well, look, hey, Stace, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you.
I think
Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine, and I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that, that's for another day, with him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure.
Speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacey has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of the other issues we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids.
as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland public schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years, versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right,
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and do, knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and I know it's fine. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was
mm-hmm.
what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question. Look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. As you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now, you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in, and I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. That I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm, you know, I've had some good.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972. Because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking. But they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B.
Code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
sure,
we've
absolutely.
Spoken before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey, Whitney.
Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen, well, I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Yeah, well, look, hey, Stacy, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realize that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you. I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure.
Speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacy has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It was an honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of the other issues we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids.
as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's health care, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland public schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million contract to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years, versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what you were just what Whitney asked you and what Ted, what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know this is a good example. Be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right,
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and I know it's fine. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was
mm-hmm.
what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question. Look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. As you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now, you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in, and I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I'm, I've had some good.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972.